Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now, you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two go-anywhere pillows for 40% off, and that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow.
Joder, tío. Joder, tío.
I was sadly another terror attack, this time in Barcelona in Spain, another European attack. We know at this hour at least 13 reported killed, over 50 people injured. And I had a van plowing into crowds in the heart of Barcelona earlier today. Spanish media reporting, at least, again, as I said, 13 killed, over 50 injured, 10 very seriously. Radio stations there citing police sources as saying the death toll is likely going to go up and might be much higher. They're also, you know, we just got word, by the way, and I have not been able to confirm this, Lauren, and I know you sent this to me, but we know for sure that this is the guy Well, I'm sorry, what? Fox News is reporting it. Okay, so his name is Dries Ukabere. Is that how you say it? I have no idea yet, but we'll get to the bottom of that either. But anyway, graphic photos, videos of the scene showing bloody victims on the sidewalk. Scene that has sadly, sadly, sadly become all too familiar over the past years in European cities. And you can see some of them online. You don't want to even begin to look at some of these things. But the suspect identified by the civil guard, apparently, in the country. And the van used in the attack was rented by this individual. And according to the civil guard, it's not clear yet to the degree to which the police know or what his motivation was. But a Facebook page that appeared to be the suspect's gave the name that I just mentioned to you, saying he lives in France, and the page shared anti-Semitic posts, including a video with blatant Nazi imagery, a post about Muslim reaction to Christianity, and Moroccan music videos. Now, this is all fairly preliminary, and this is just coming out literally as we're coming on the air here today, so we want a little more time to confirm a lot of this. But they've got apparently anti-Semitic glorifying materials, glorifying Nazi materials. So it seems likely, based on the image that the guard had released and the image that you see on this particular page, they seem pretty identical to me. One of the videos you actually have, and I can't see all of them, but it looks like Barack Obama wearing a yarmulke and Hillary Clinton and Sarah Palin is in it. I can't identify the other people in it. And you got, you know, other photos bearing, you know, obviously very extreme points of view. Anyway, a source familiar with the initial government assessment, our assessment of it, said the incident appears to be terrorism and the president is being kept up to date abreast of the latest information. Media reports saying that the van was zigzagging at high speed down this famous avenue in Barcelona, which is Las Ramblas, which is a magnet for tourism. And there was screams. Another report, where did I get this earlier today, that it was a Jerusalem Post is reporting that the van, in fact, went into a crowded kosher restaurant in Barcelona, which obviously could be evidence that it's an anti-Semitic attack, but clearly a terrorist attack, and a van swerving into these crowds and you know, here we go again, and it is now vehicles as a weapon of terror. We saw what happened over the weekend. This young woman was killed down in Charlottesville. And it really, I guess I've always said that if people have murder and desire to hurt innocent people, whatever their sick, twisted, evil ideology, they're going to find a way to do it. And, you know, then it'll, because it always happens if it's a gun, then it becomes in the country a gun control debate. But we keep seeing that it's beyond guns in a lot of different ways. We're going to continue to update that. We've got Buck Sexton is coming on the program, former CIA agent, is going to join us. Jonathan Gillum checks in with us today. Raheem Kassam is with us today, and he has his new book out, which actually fits right into the general narrative of everything. We have another story that we're following very, very closely. John Solomon of The Hill is going to be with us, and The Hill reporting today that Julian Assange was, in fact, had a meeting for well over 3 hours yesterday with Dana Rohrabacher. Known Dana Rohrabacher for a long time, California congressman. He chairs the important House Subcommittee on Eurasia Policy. He's now become the first American congressman to meet with Assange during this three-hour-plus meeting at the Ecuadorian embassy face-to-face in London. Apparently, Julian Assange's attorney was there. And that's where he's now been holed up for years, meaning Assange. Rohrabacher recounted his conversation exclusively to John Solomon, saying our three-hour meeting covered a wide array of issues, including the WikiLeaks exposure of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, emails during last year's presidential election. And he said that Julian emphatically stated that the Russians were not involved in the hacking or disclosure of those emails. He's pressed a little bit for more detail on the source of the documents, meaning Rohrabacher pressing Julian Assange, and Rohrabacher said he had information apparently to share privately with President Trump. And Julian also indicated that he's open to further discussions regarding specific information about the DNC email incident that is currently unknown to the public. U.S. intelligence insisting they have solid proof, which they've not made public. That contradicts this, but nobody's ever seen it. How do we know? And the revelations, of course, unflattering about Hillary Clinton and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and John Podesta and his personal email. Well, that was certainly separate because it was a phishing site that he had clicked onto that resulted in his particular case. So we're watching that fairly closely. So what's going to come of this, I don't know, but it does reinforce. We've had Julian Assange on this radio program, I believe, what, four times now, and he's been on my TV show. He's back on our TV show in January, and he has repeatedly said to me that Russia's not the source and no state is the source of what happened, the DNC email leaks. Here's what he said to me.
Our source is not the Russian government.
So in other words, let me be clear. Russia did not give you the Podesta documents or anything from the DNC.
That's correct.
Now, what's important about this is manifold. If, in fact, Robert Mueller is looking into Trump-Russia collusion, and, of course, we have all the incidents leading up to what happened and how the special counsel was appointed. We've also talked at length about how it was that James Comey wanted this to happen. And he did it by leaking government information, government material, some of it classified, we're told. And that he specifically did it for the purpose, giving it to the New York Times through a Columbia professor, for the very purpose that a special counsel would, in fact, be appointed. Okay, so all of that happened. Then we have the eight donors of the 16 people that were hired by Robert Mueller. Well, eight of them are Democratic donors, and one was even Hillary Clinton's attorney on the Clinton Foundation issue and Preventing Freedom of Information Act requests. Well, that's all getting pretty interesting. There's not one Republican donor to any Republican candidates of the other eight remaining members. One guy had to leave yesterday because of conflict of interest issues, which we'll get into. And I think there's a lot of other people with conflict of interest issues. But it does raise a lot of questions. Now, here's just certain indisputable facts. WikiLeaks has never been wrong, not a single time in 11 years, in the material that they have released, not once. Now, if you want to just act by comparison, how many times has fake news New York Times been wrong, or fake news NBC, or fake news CNN, or fake news The Washington Post? They get it wrong more often than they get it right. and they rush to the front pages because they're just desperate in many of these instances, especially print newspapers, to stay afloat and keep their heads above water because they're literally losing customers and they're bleeding customers every day as people now have found other sources to get their information from. But here's the point. If the original purpose of the investigation is to look at Trump-Russia collusion and the emails and so on and so forth, and that it wasn't Russia, does Robert Mueller, the special counsel, if the one person that knows for sure, at least where he got the information from, and has proof of such, and that proof is offered and made available to Robert Mueller, and he has no intention of getting on a plane or his investigators getting on a plane or getting on a phone and at least talking to Julian Assange, to me, that would be a dereliction of duty. What should the role of any investigator, prosecutor be? Let's just start with this fundamental premise that their job is to discover the truth. That's what their job is. So if the person at the heart of this is saying you're wrong, the narrative has been wrong, lies have been told by the media for months and months and months and months and months and months and months, and by people with political agendas for months and months and months and months and months, and he says he's got evidence that can prove otherwise, well, is it really going to be that difficult to sit down and talk to and find out what this guy has, especially if he's offering it so that the truth can come out? Do the American people deserve to know the truth after they've been spoon-fed a narrative for all of these months without any evidence? And I think the answer is yes. Now, do I have the answers myself? No. Do I have my very strong suspicions? Yeah, I do. I have very strong. So we'll continue to follow that story and where it leads us, but it also puts an obligation on Congress. What do I mean by that? Congress has an obligation. They've got to get to the bottom of all this. They have an obligation to get to the truth as well. So we'll continue to follow that and watch and monitor what is happening. Now, we also have a follow-up to everything that has been happening in Charlottesville, and the president tweeting out a number of things today. He tweeted out, it's sad to see the history and culture of our great country being ripped apart with the removal of our beautiful statues. It's now literally North Carolina. It's Brooklyn, New York. It's Baltimore. It's sort of like taking on a fever pitch and it's moving around the country. And he goes on with the removal of these statues and monuments. He said, you can't change history, but you can learn from it. Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, who's next? Washington, Jefferson. He says, so foolish. Also, the beauty is being taken out of our cities, towns, parks, and it's going to be greatly missed and never able to be comparably replaced. And the president took on Lindsey Graham today. He said, publicity-seeking Lindsey Graham falsely stated that I said there is moral equivalency between the KKK, neo-Nazis, and white supremacists, and people like Mrs. Heyer. Where did Lindsey Graham say that? That is absurd. Anyway, because I've been following these comments and reporting on them and watching it since this unfolded on Saturday. Now, the president tweets such a disgusting lie. He just can't forget his election trouncing. The people of South Carolina will remember. And he said the public is learning even more so how dishonest the fake news is. They totally misrepresent what I say about hate, bigotry, etc. And then he said, shame on them. So we'll cover all these three stories in all the detail today as they continue to unfold. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the people that are victims in Spain today. It's sad that this happens so frequently, so often. You know, Linda said we have a massive attack, and I'm like, I'm literally on the edge of my seat because I didn't have my television set on as I was preparing today. And so we're going to continue to watch that.
Hannity Headlines, a bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you everywhere you go. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
All right, as we roll along, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program here. You know, my friend Greg Jarrett wrote a great piece today from Fox News. And, you know, he starts out and he says, the opinions expressed by white supremacists, neo-Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan are repugnant. Everybody with a heart, mind, conscience, and a soul agrees with that. And he said the people who convey those views don't share American values. He's right, they don't. And they seem to relish spewing their racist, anti-Semitic bile. They're also anti-Catholic, but that's a he's right. And instead of trying to reason with them, it would be easier to somehow banish them to a remote island. Yeah, he's right there, too. And then he goes on to say, let them wallow alone in their misery and their hatred. If only their this multi-generational global problem could be solved so easily. But then he goes on to give a lesson. And it really echoed what I've been saying earlier in the week about the First Amendment. And he talks about our founding fathers resolved to protect all speech, even expressions of hatred, expressions of bigotry. He said it's one of the steep prices we pay for living in this democratic republic. And he said, in America, you're free to be ignorant and flaunt your ignorance. What you're not free to do is to visit acts of violence on others. Now, I'm just saying this in this light here. There's a headline on Drudge Report yesterday about Ebony Williams, who's been a friend of mine. She's been at Fox. Now, we don't agree politically on a lot of issues in her commentary that she made about Donald Trump. I can still see her goodness, still have a friendship, and still like her. We cannot live in a society where it's people think it's just okay to give death threats to people they disagree with. When the president said, and we've got the video, Antifa and other groups there were fights among both sides. Now, I would argue that, yeah, you show up and you're a Nazi and you're a white supremacist, it creates a natural anger in good people. But you still don't have the right to punch them and beat the crap out of them. And if you do, that's breaking the law. And just like those that would threaten assassination, there's one guy that did it, a state rep in Missouri, senator in Missouri against the president, or talk show host, or you try to silence voices you don't disagree with. Hey, with optimism once again on the rise in America, the working people of this country are more important than ever. On the Job, from Hired to Retired, well, it's a new podcast from our friends at Express Employment Professionals that digs into the lives of men and women at work and explores their journeys as they fight to make the American dream a reality. Now check out the new podcast, On the Job, from Hired to Retired, on iHeartRadio, iTunes, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Or just go to expresspros.com/podcast for more information. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of the program. What did I do with that other piece of paper? I had it right here in front of me, and I seem to have lost it. Ugh. Anyway, I'll pull it up on my computer. Let not your heart be troubled. One of the benefits of having a computer, even though you print it out, and I've got 400,000 million papers in front of me. So here, can you imagine the media meltdown if somebody was calling in the Obama years, God forbid, and I remember many, 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 many times saying, we must protect our presidents, our elected officials. And a friend of mine just sent me something that is trending on Twitter even now as we speak, and it's, I hope Trump is assassinated. Well, according to the Daily Caller, a Missouri state senator said in a now-deleted Facebook post that she hopes President Donald Trump is assassinated. Maria Chappelle Nadal acknowledged on Thursday that she wrote a post which read, I hope Trump is assassinated. She made this comment in exchange with a left-wing activist that his cousin is a Secret Service agent. And Chappelle Nadal confirmed to a reporter with a local TV station in St. Louis that she posted the comment. I put something up on my personal Facebook page. It has now been deleted, she said. Not exactly clear what prompted this, but I certainly would like to know who the Secret Service agent that she is related to is, because does that guy share the feelings of this woman as around the president? You know, because she's implied he spent 4 years with Obama. Now 2 years with Trump, because we need to know things like that. And I'm assuming that the Secret Service, which does a great job, I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of these guys over the years. They're wonderful people. A lot of nights on the TV show, I alternate two pins on the TV show. One is the World Trade Center with an American flag and United We Stand, and the other is a Secret Service American flag pin. And I'd like to know the answer to it. There's a story out today that raises a question whether or not Antifa agitators that showed up in Charlottesville on Saturday were bought and paid for. Anyway, apparently it was uncovered, and some of the media reported it, that some suspicious activity by an L.A.-based company that calls itself Crowds on Demand. And a Craigslist post last Monday, a full week before the Charlottesville protest, raising questions about whether paid protesters was sourced by a Los Angeles-based PR firm specializing in innovative events to serve as agitators and counter-protests. $25 an hour to actors, photographers. In that particular case, to participate at events in Charlotte, North Carolina area, as opposed to Charlottesville, Virginia. So maybe just a coincidence. I don't know for sure, but we're going to keep an eye on that. The Virginia governor, Terry McAuliffe, Reason reports that contradicting statements by him, the Virginia State Police say they didn't find any caches of weapons that were stashed around in Charlottesville in advance of last Saturday's deadly white nationalist rally. Well, hang on a second. In an interview on Monday on Pod Save the People podcast, hosted by DeRay McKesson, by the way, this is the Black Lives Matter guy that made it to the White House, the same group that said, "What do we want, dead cops? When do we want them now?" And McAuliffe claimed the white nationalists who streamed into Charlottesville hid weapons throughout the town. They had battering rams, and we had picked up different weapons that they had stashed around the city, he said. Now, McAuliffe's comments were picked up by a lot of other news outlets and spread through social media. But a spokesperson for the state police in Virginia say that no such stashes were found, and says that the governor was referring to the briefing provided him in advance of Saturday's rally, and that extra security measures were being taken by local and state police as a safety precaution in advance of this march. Searches were conducted in and around Emancipation and McIntyre Parks. No weapons were located as a result of those searches. Well, he also said that these people were outgunned. I didn't see any evidence of weapons there as well. So is somebody going to ask Terry McAuliffe why he lied? Because apparently he's not telling the truth. There is, I mentioned in the last half hour, with the president's tweets that went out as it relates to monuments around the country. And there is on the national front, we know the Department of the Interior is resisting calls to have statues of the Confederate war heroes removed from Civil War battlefields. You know what my answer is on all this? My answer right now is, if let the local states, communities, towns, let them resolve it themselves. Because, you know, when we get 50 million Americans back working and get 50 million Americans off of food stamps, and we get 90 some odd million Americans all that want jobs, get them the jobs that they want, then, you know, in the meantime, everyone can focus on whatever they want. I just think we have to prioritize getting people to work. Anyway, so that's happening today. A leftist lawyer wants to impeach Trump for Charlottesville. I just keep saying how unhinged the left and the media is in this country. Now we have some nutball lawyer who's said that President Trump's press conference was an impeachable offense. Okay, sure. And then you got fake news media clowns now saying there's no such thing as the alt-left. The funny thing is, I've been saying alt-left radicals for a long, long time. So the Washington Examiner has a point that they make in an article today. The New York Times article described the term alt-left as part of a broad lexicon of far-right terminology and cited researchers that say there's no such thing as the alt-left. CNN had a big chyron, "What's the alt-left?" and then followed it with excerpts that say it's a made-up term, and people are attributing alt-left to me. And anyway, liberal writer James Walcott wrote a piece for Vanity Fair in March arguing the alt-left can't match the alt-right for strength, malignancy, or tentacled reach. Now, does anybody remember, it wasn't that long ago, some of these Trump rallies and the threats of violence at colleges and canceling conservative speakers because they were afraid of alt-left riots? You know, how many Trump supporters were assaulted when the alt-left showed up? And the alt-left, you know, what do we see? And, you know, who was involved in some of the violence and the looting and the property destruction in Ferguson, Missouri, or Baltimore? You know, remember we had incidents and the reports that went out about people coming in from other towns and cities, and then we saw torched buildings and looted stores. Is that city recovered since? I doubt it. I remember bringing in a bunch of store owners and shopkeepers, and their whole life savings were put up in their businesses, and they lost everything. Nobody seems to care about them. We never went after the people responsible in those cases. Baltimore, Ferguson. We've seen a lot of violence in a lot of cities in the country. Portland, Oregon. You know, so, yeah, I mean, there is a radical alt-left, and some of them want to destroy the president. And we see that almost every day. You know, it's pretty ironic. I noticed Bernie Sanders charged that President Trump bears some responsibility for the violence. How does he bear responsibility for that? Because if he's responsible, then by the same logic, then his supporter that was responsible, that went out there and tried to assassinate Steve Scalise and got these other police officers and shot these other people, then by that logic, then you would say that, well, Bernie Sanders is partly responsible.
How much of any responsibility do you think that the Trump administration has for conjuring that behavior?
Look, I think it is when you have a president who doesn't have the guts to say what the vast majority of the people understand to be true, that white supremacy and neo-Nazism have got to be condemned. He can't even do that. The message he is sending out to racists and neo-Nazis all over the country is it's okay. Hey, in fact, you heard some language today. President hasn't condemned us. Why don't we do more rallies? Why don't we spread the word of white supremacy and racism and neo-Nazism? So do I think the president bears some responsibility for that? Absolutely, yes.
Well, the president did condemn it. The president did condemn it again and again and again, and the president did it repeatedly. Now, I want to just point out, I do understand one thing. I think for good people to have a reaction to white supremacy and racism and bigotry and hatred and the Klan and David Duke and all these nutcases, fringe, I think when you see people like that, I do think it brings about and brings out of good people morally justifiable anger, sort of a righteous anger. Because you see evil, you know, right before your eyes. You see a disgusting human being. But again, it doesn't give you the right to go out there and beat the crap out of them. And I think that's what Greg Jarrett was pointing out. You know, we had, for example, the AP had reported, and this is the AP, this is not Fox News. But anyway, the AP was very, very clear in them pointing out that, well, not sure who provoked first. Both sides were hitting each other at Justice Park before the police arrived. Well, hang on a second. That they agree, the AP agrees with the president. The guy on the ground is a Unite the Right protester. Those in black and red are Antifa protesters. And nobody seems, and the ACLU said the same thing. Those are people on the ground reporting it that have no seeming agenda in this particular case. Nobody's saying that. I do believe, you know, you got to remember that, you know, there are people that, and sadly, in a lot of these incidences, people have agendas. Then you have people that are curious, and then you have people that are activists. You can identify some people when they're wearing whatever it is that identifies them as part of this group or part of that group. And sometimes you don't know all the facts that are going on, but the AP, I don't think, put out a false report that both sides were fighting, or the ACLU put out a false report about that as well. But the media acted like they didn't know what President Trump was talking about. They ran with a false narrative on Sunday that he wouldn't say the name, and then they ran with a wild narrative that he didn't, you know, somehow, if he didn't mention their name, he's sympathetic to white supremacy. And we've gone back with tapes after tapes after tapes of him condemning and disavowing and disapproving and not wanting any part of, et cetera, et cetera. You know, where, you know, you got to look at all these incidences. What do you call somebody that tries to assassinate Republicans and nearly kills Steve Scalise and shoots all these other people? You know, and what, you know, do you say that the person that supports Bernie Sanders is responsible or Bernie Sanders is responsible? No. It doesn't make any sense. Was the president, did he learn something from Barack Obama, who rushed to judgment in a lot of high-profile race cases like Cambridge and in the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case and in Ferguson and in Baltimore? The president was a four-time loser. at the time, President Obama. He rushed to judgment, and he went with a false narrative. And it's and frankly, from that position, you've got to be more careful. People are saying Trump needs to be more careful, so he's careful in this case. You know, there's just a lot of things out here that all these people, Robert De Niro, Johnny Depp, Madonna, I thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House. When's the last time an actor assassinated a president? And you got this state senator now in Missouri. And you look at the incendiary rhetoric all over the place. And I don't hear the widespread outrage and condemnation from the left in all these particular cases. Why don't we just say that there are evil people out here in the world? I keep saying, I wrote the book, Deliver Us from Evil. And when you see evil, it's right to speak up about it. I actually admire some people that would stand up to these white supremacists and get in their grill and tell them that they're evil and confront them on issues. You have every right of freedom of speech to do that. And I understand the moral repugnancy of the whole thing. It just grabs your solar plexus when you see evil and when you see people that are that ignorant. And then on the other hand, you know, you get all of this that was ignored by the left. And then the outright false narrative by the left. Pretty amazing times we're living in. All right, we got a lot coming up. When we come back, we are going to go back to Barcelona and have the very latest on this terror attack from earlier today. Buck Sexton is with us. We'll also be checking in with Raheem Kassam. He, I think, is in London today. Also, we have an exclusive interview with our friend John Solomon, Julian Assange, now speaking for the first time to a U.S. congressman. That's Dana Rohrabacher. And what did he say? And what does it mean? And will it impact investigations with Mueller in Congress? We'll get to that. And then our other big story of the day is we'll have the latest fallout from what's going on in Charlottesville and the president's comments. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. All right, 13 dead and over 50 injured. Talked that there might be even more dead, and we'll continue to follow the breaking news. Sad tragedy, another terror attack, this time in Barcelona. We're beginning to get more information on who the individual is responsible, and we'll bring those details to you as they become available. Also, Dana Rohrabacher, congressman from California, meets with Julian Assange, apparently has a private message for the president. John Solomon has all the breaking news on that. And we'll also be checking in with Herman Cain today and so much more. 800-941-SHAWN, our number.
Screams, panic, sirens, victims lying on the ground, bystanders shocked and confused as to what to do to help. The familiar aftermath of a terrorist attack with a vehicle weaponized to kill pedestrians. It looks as if some had been thrown into market stalls by the force of the impact. It appears the white van may have traveled several hundred meters along the city's most popular thoroughfare before finally coming to a halt. Any thought that this could simply be a road traffic accident ended with the sight of armed police swarming through the area looking for suspects. It was late afternoon and the historic Las Ramblas district was packed, as usual, with locals and tourists. The central strip is pedestrianized, but cars are permitted to travel either side. As the dead and injured lay where they'd been hit, those who'd had a narrow escape tried to get to safety.
I saw a woman next to me screaming for her kids. Police were very, very quickly there. Police officers with guns, vans everywhere, and then the whole street started getting pushed back. You'd see like chaos at the top, like just cars, etc. And couldn't tell what was happening. And then a shopkeeper who was running down this way, the police were pushed. The police officers who got there just started screaming at people to move back, move back.
Suddenly just people started running towards us, screaming and shouting, run, run, run. So, you know, I grabbed the two girls.
Spoke with police who were very nervous and turning tourists away, saying that there's a, a fugitive on the loose around here, and that was dangerous to stay around.
Catalan police say the death toll is expected to rise. Ian Woods, Sky News.
All right, as we continue our two Sean Hannity show, the latest out of Barcelona, and we keep getting updates in terms of those injured and killed, and the number keeps going up. One suspect in a van has been arrested. There's been a shootout, and yet part of an ongoing pattern of never-ending terrorist attacks all throughout Europe and the United States and, frankly, the world, and the world's inability, once again, to deal with these terrorists. Whatever form they usually take, it doesn't matter. We don't deal with it. Joining us now, Buck Sexton, host of Buck Sexton with America Now, former CIA agent, NYP Intelligence Division Specialist. Raheem Kassam is with us, editor of Breitbart London, author of his brand new book. It just happens to be out this week, No Go Zone, How Sharia Law is Coming to a Neighborhood Near You. Welcome both of you to the program. Raheem, we always go back to you when it's Europe. There is one attack after another. They just continue, just, you know, put a circle around Europe, and it goes from spot to spot to spot, from Germany to Great Britain to France to Spain. It never ends. Belgium, wherever it happens to be.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And now we've seen that this is yet another attack in the long line of attacks this year, really becoming an epidemic, Sean. We're talking about 30 attempted terror attacks or executed terror attacks this year, just two of them not related to migrants or Muslim migrants or radical Islam. The rest of them all linked to that. And it looks like we're seeing that today again. 13 people dead so far that we know of, and at least 50 injured there in Barcelona. Of course, lots of information coming out from Spain's interior ministry again, but it takes us back once again to questioning mass migration, to questioning Muslim migration, to questioning these migrant enclaves that you see popping up across Europe, as you know, the subject of my book, No Go Zones, and how these people are actually being radicalized and how they're finding it so easy to carry out these attacks in the West.
Well, I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? I mean, it really is. And one of the things that always surprised me as we did our deep dive into the migration issue into Europe, and so many times you've been on the program and we talk about the issue of assimilation, and we talk about the Sharia courts that exist even in Great Britain, and the fact that I know you can't say no-go zones exist, but I've interviewed people that have been to them one after another, and I've seen the images because a Fox anchor one time, not an anchor, a reporter once got in there and showed us, and you've been there yourself.
Absolutely. I've been there. I've been to many of them. You know, it's a complete lie to say these places don't exist. You know, the caricature that some of the other news outlets out there want to portray is that we're saying that these areas are policed by, you know, Muslim men who stop people going in. That's not what we're saying. No-go zones are places where you either don't want to go because it would be too dangerous, where the police don't go, where postal services won't deliver, where young white girls will be spat at, set upon, called all sorts of nasty names, told to cover their heads, told to cover their hair. You know, it's as if we're getting to a point now when only if you have the sort of militarized Muslim areas will the mainstream media start responding to this and start actually reporting on it. But you're starting to have these areas here in the United States too, Sean. And look at what's going on: 30 terrorist attacks in Europe this year. Something isn't right.
No, it's such a good point. Now, Buck, your background and your expertise, you followed a lot of this. I know many, many people in the intelligence community, and I know, you know, the hard work that they do every day, but you still are we're still incapable of getting a hold of and stopping these attacks, and they continue to come in varying forms with each and every attack.
Well, Sean, one of the big problems here, and people are often repeating this now because it's become, as Raheem was just saying, it's so commonplace now. We're getting almost numbed to the regularity of these horrific terrorist attacks in Europe. And I should note, as somebody who used to work for the NYPD Intelligence Division here in New York City, people often think of terrorist casualties, and you'll see these charts that are out there to say the threat is overstated. What they don't take into account, Sean, is that there are any number of mass casualty jihadist terror attacks on U.S. soil that are prevented by the work of law enforcement, by the intelligence community, and that maybe gets a quick news story on page three.
By the way, it often doesn't get any reporting at all because we'll never know about it. You know, our guys have to be right 100% of the time. They only need to get through one time, and people die.
Well, that's exactly right. And to get a sense of the scale of the threat, people need to understand. I mean, I worked on the Times Square bombing back in 2010 when I was with NYPD Intel. And if that bomb had been constructed differently and if a few things had gone differently, you could have lost hundreds of people in Times Square on a Saturday afternoon. I could go over dozens of incidents just like that where we moved past the story quickly because there weren't mass casualties, but that's only because either the terrorists messed up or because we stopped them more often than not. It's because we stopped them before they could actually do something. And in the case of Europe, the big problem here, and we keep seeing this now with these vehicle attacks, is that they're taking out the element of sophistication that sometimes works to our favor, meaning that the attack planning is so simplistic. I mean, just getting into it, and Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State, there is specificity about this, Sean. They're saying, get a large vehicle, get momentum, pick a civilian area where there's a lot of foot traffic, understand that they will scatter once they realize what's going on, consider bringing additional weapons for when you exit the vehicle for more casualties and also perhaps to try and get away or get into a shootout with police. Any imbecile can do this. It's no longer bomb construction. It's not attacking a hardened position, a military outpost, or anything like that. And this is why we're seeing these large-scale or mass casualty events, whether it's Nice. I mean, now we already have 13 confirmed killed in Barcelona. You saw what happened in London. We've seen what's happened in Berlin. Very difficult to prevent these attacks because you have to stop the person. The tactic itself is so straightforward and so terrifyingly simple that if we rely on them making mistakes at that level, it's not going to happen.
But and these are relatively considered. I mean, you're talking about the destruction of and loss of human life. These are considered relatively small. They still want big events like what happened on 9/11 to happen again. And to what extent have all these terror attacks impacted public opinion in Europe, Raheem?
In a great way. I mean, your country, my country, we've always been incredibly welcoming nations. I wouldn't be here if that wasn't the case. Firstly, my parents wouldn't have been able to immigrate into the United Kingdom, and I wouldn't be here in New York City right now if those things were not the case. But people are tiring of it, and you can understand why.
Just tell them when you're coming in that you're a friend of mine. You're good.
Well, if you look at just from this year...
Tell me you're a friend of Buck's and you'll really get in. I mean, he's the youngest-looking former CIA director I've ever seen. I mean, look at it. He looks like he's 18 years old, and he served in the NYPD intelligence, and he served in the CIA, and he looks like he's 17. You don't even look 18.
Sean, look at the data from January 2017, right? The Chatham House think tank in London from this year found that 64% of Belgians, 53% of Germans, 58% of Greeks, 61% of the French, this goes on and on throughout Europe, say they want a full and total shutdown of Muslim migration into their countries. These are details that I break down in my book. It's not going away, and this sentiment is getting worse and worse, and my greatest fear is if we don't do something to tackle this, if we don't do something to address these concerns, we're going to end up having pitch battles on our streets, and that's what nobody wants.
All right, stay right there. We'll take a quick break. More with Raheem Kassam and Buck Sexton, and then John Solomon, a blockbuster report. Dana Rohrabacher meets for over 3 hours with Julian Assange. What did he say? We'll find out next.
Hannity Headline. A bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you anywhere you go. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
All right, as we continue with Buck Sexton and Raheem Kassam talking about Barcelona, the latest terrorist attack in Europe today. You know, I guess the only thing you look at, for example, now it's interesting because you have this individual responsible. I don't know if we fully have identified yet the person in Charlottesville and his background, but you've got all these neo-Nazi racist bigot, you know, these evil people down in Charlottesville. Mm. And then you've got other extremist groups. And then you got a president saying that there's a lot of hate and the hate has to stop. And then the president saying specifically, Buck, as it relates to radical Islamists, because we've had so many instances involving radical Islamists, that he's saying, okay, well, if you come from countries that practice Sharia, persecute women and kill gays and lesbians and persecute Christians and Jews, we just want to make sure you're not bringing those values with you. And you see the reaction of the left in this country. It's something that I think is fundamental and basic. There's no right to come to America by somebody that's not an American.
Well, you have these activist courts that have decided that there is that right, Sean, which is amazing. And by the way, they will lose as it makes its way through the court system. But in the meantime, those judges get to pretend to be heroes. They're progressive heroes. But President Trump sees this as an ideological struggle. And one of the big issues that I think people were having a hard time defending in the Obama administration was that there was time and again, whether it was referring to Fort Hood as workplace violence or not referring to the clear terror shootings in Chattanooga as the acts of a jihadist targeting our military, there were any number of cases where there was an effort to downplay under the Obama administration what was obviously jihadist terrorism, make it seem like it wasn't, or they would wait, they would delay. Look, I'd be over.
Hey, Buck, it's even worse than that. They wouldn't even call it what it is. It was workplace violence, overseas contingency operations, and on and on. They just had an unwillingness to recognize simple, basic, fundamental truth.
Sean, I was on a panel at Nice of former, of guys with grayer hair than me and many years in various.
That's pretty much everybody in your industry besides
right.
You.
I've got a few.
By the way,
years.
I mean this in the most complimentary way. Buck and I have had many discussions because when he fills in for Rush, he and I get to talk and say hello to each other, and I've become very fond of him, and I think his background is amazing. And I look at him, and I'm like, how did you do all that? You're only 17.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think I might have been the youngest person to run an Intel deep dive for the president at the agency, although no one has contested that yet. I don't know.
Well, it means you're pretty smart and you're also a patriot, so I thank you.
I appreciate
for what you
that.
Do.
But just on really quickly on the notion of what was going on with the Obama administration, what happened in the Obama administration after the Nice attack, I was on this panel at CNN, and Sean, one person after another, there are dozens of people in the street murdered in south of France on Bastille Day, on a national holiday in France. They're on the streets murdered, and we go to one so-called expert after another, and I'm the last one in this lineup of four, and I'm the only one who wants to talk about jihadism and terrorism and the ideology and how to prevent the next attack. Every other person on that panel said, this is what happens when you don't integrate Muslim minorities well enough. This is what happens when you don't do enough assimilation.
Raheem's book, by the way, what he's talking about, no-goes, you can't have no-go zones and you can't have Sharia courts is what you're saying. There's got to be integration assimilation. Right?
It's a nonsense to think that you can have these enclaves and not have the radicals take them over and the fundamentalists take them over and that you won't have terror attacks. Of course you will. Look, I know we get it. We always get into this, but we have to appreciate our political leaders have been totally and utterly complicit in the creation of these areas, the welfareism that plays into all of this. They like to keep them in these little government housing projects. We have to appreciate that unless we change the political leaders in Europe right now, we're not going to get a change. It is deadly. It is killing people, Sean.
All right. Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Buck. I apologize.
No, I agree with the sentiments your guest is expressing. I just think that this is finally now under the Trump administration, when it comes to jihadist terrorism, there's an understanding that the ideology is key. This isn't about lack of jobs. This isn't about oppression. This isn't about any number of those things. This is about people who have embraced a worldview that brings them to engage in horrific acts of violence based in what they think is some theocratic justification and kill a lot of innocent people in the process.
All right. We really appreciate, Buck, all you've done. Raheem, the book is a phenomenal, eye-opening read. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate both of you. 800-941-SEAN, our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We've got blockbuster news with Congressman Dana Rohrabacher meeting with Julian Assange, who's offering to make a deal saying it was never Russia as it relates to the DNC leaks. Should the United States and Robert Mueller and others be paying attention to this? Is it a dereliction of duty if they don't?
We know you never want to miss the Sean Hannity Show. And now you never have to. Just sign up for Hannity Headlines. A bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you on your laptop, your mobile phone, everywhere you go, even to your liberal in-law's place in Vermont.
So, yeah.
And after a few hours of that, you'll be glad you brought Sean along. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
Our source is not the Russian government.
So, in other words, let me be clear. Russia did not give you the Podesta documents or anything from the DNC.
That's correct. The most serious email in the DNC collection is actually, to my mind, not the most, you know, salacious. It is an instruction through the chain of command of the DNC to plant false stories about Bernie Sanders' supporters committing violence with a number of outlets and to, quote, not have their fingerprints on it, unquote.
All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. 800-941 Sean is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. So yesterday, The Hill, John Solomon, investigative reporter, broke a big story that Congressman Dana Rohrabacher was in London and had a conversation face-to-face, apparently for some length of time, with Julian Assange of WikiLeaks. And his explanation of how Russia was not and was never his source as it relates to the DNC emails. Why is this important? Well, we're going to have an investigation into Russia, although now it seems to have moved on. Russia's not important anymore because they got a bigger issue that they think they can use to bludgeon the president with, as they're trying to use with every issue. But anyway, Dana Rohrabacher, a California Republican congressman, chairs the important House Subcommittee on Eurasia Policy. Now, he has become the first American, and especially the first American lawmaker, to meet with Julian Assange during a three-hour private gathering at the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, and I'd been there, has been holed up now for years. And Rohrabacher recounted his conversation and was able to relay that to John Solomon, who's with us now. John, how are you?
Great to be with you, Sean.
So I've had, I think, four radio interviews, Linda, with Julian, and one television interview with him. Here's a guy that now has been in this business for 11 years of releasing information that governments do not like. And here's a guy for 11 years that's never been proven wrong, proven to say anything wrong. And so when he said to me back in January what I just played you, and he's saying that to Dana Rohrabacher, it goes a little further this time. Tell us what the news update is.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think you struck on something. Julian Assange has been a hero of the media for a long time. At least he was during the end of the Bush administration and most of the Obama years. Journalists won Pulitzer Prizes covering his work and taking his stuff seriously. But as soon as he...
You mean like the New York Times running with his stuff?
Yeah, and others, Washington Post, and lots of different people that took different things from WikiLeaks and made very important stories. And today, when his tune has changed a little bit and he has something that might be contrary to the official Washington story, that might even help Donald Trump, you barely see a peep out of the media covering part of the story. But I think what happened last night was very important. One of the things I wrote in there was that his lawyer was present when Dana Rohrabacher came in. The reason you might bring a lawyer for Julian Assange is you might be thinking about trying to get some sort of deal where I can help the Russia investigation. I can tell authorities how they're wrong, how I got the documents. There's a new thread here, and force their hand, because he's been raising his hand in the media with you saying, listen, it wasn't Russia. No one showed up and said, prove otherwise. Now a congressman showed up, said, I have evidence. Please bring it back to President Trump. That's what Dana Rohrabacher told me he was going to do. He's going to bring back some important information to the president. And it looks like he's putting himself out there for a possible deal to learn something we might not know about the Russia investigation. And I think he's forcing the intelligence committees and the intelligence agencies to at least listen and hear his side of the story. I don't think they're going to be able to get away with just saying, trust us, we can't show you the evidence, but it really was Russia. So I think he's forcing the hand here, and he's reached out to an American official for the first time.
Well, is it a fair statement to say, John, that there's really only one person that absolutely positively knows the truth about it, and that's him?
Theoretically. Now, let's keep in mind,
well, it's his website. I mean, he's the one that put it up. He has to know where it came from, where he got it from, right?
Well, let's remember, though, that he never met the people in person, right? Because he's sitting in exile in the embassy. And he thinks he knows who he's talking to, right? Now, there's always a possibility. I always try to keep all options open until we rule him out as a reporter, that who he thought he was talking to was a Russian spy posing as someone. We've seen that happen. But he should have a very good trail of evidence. He's been very careful, very accurate about every document he ever got. I've never heard anyone say something on WikiLeaks isn't accurate or real, right? He's been very accurate as a purveyor of classified information into the public realm. I think at the very least, the intelligence agencies ought to listen to his side of the story and compare it to their evidence. And I think that that's what he's forcing them to do. Just put a deal out there and say, you should talk to me or you're not giving truth a fair chance here.
It's a pretty fascinating phenomenon. Now, if we have a special counsel that's been appointed, Robert Mueller,
right.
And Robert Mueller is supposed to, he's supposed to have a fidelity to the truth, right? And he's supposed to uncover every rock, right? And he's supposed to look at any lead that might exist out there, right?
That's right.
So if Dana Rohrabacher brings back a message that says that the person actually posted it all, and the person that knows for sure, at least maybe, look, it's very possible, and I would think likely probable, that he has direct evidence exactly where he got it from, right? Has to.
That's right. I would think that's right.
Okay. So if he has that, and if you're going to have a Trump-Russia collusion investigation, then I got to imagine that he'd be probably one of the first on the list to talk to, right?
You would think at some point, and he should be high on the list, that you should find out where Julian Assange is. Now, in the past, Julian Assange has not wanted to say where his sources are, right? And, you know, he sort of views himself as an intermediary between journalism and the intelligence community, right? And so in the past, he hasn't signaled a willingness to say, hey, I want to tell you who my sources are. But here, in having this meeting, he dropped a big signal that he's willing to cooperate with this probe, that he wants the president and the establishment in Washington to know that he has evidence that's not public that could affect the conclusions of this probe. That was one of the important words that Congressman Rohrabacher used. He has information that's not yet in the public realm that would influence this investigation. And it's going to be very interesting to see what Mueller, what the Justice Department, what the intelligence communities, and what Congress does now that Julian Assange has raised his hand and said more than, hey, just trust me, it's not Russia. I may be willing to help you show you it's not Russia. I think that's a very important moment in this evolution of this story.
There is now it's interesting because Julian is a guy. Now, I know a lot of people, they get mad at WikiLeaks, and a lot of people, you know, my biggest fear of WikiLeaks, and I've had this open conversation with Julian a number of times publicly on the air. My biggest fear when this all happened is, oh, my God, people are going to die. In other words, there are operatives on the ground in harm's way. And it's obvious from the information that he has put out that he knows who they are and where they are.
That's right.
And if that ever got out,
no doubt.
Okay, then people could die. So it was my biggest fear. But at the end of the day, I mean, he did show America a couple of things that I think are worth noting. That if he's 16 years old and he's able to hack into NASA and he's able to hack into the DOD, and he's now, what, 45 years old? And in the interim, we've really done basically nothing to prevent really smart, clever people that are wizards with computers like him or Kim.com in New Zealand, who did the same thing at a young age.
Right.
And it really, at some point, doesn't it become America? You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on you. Fool me three times, shame on you. Fool me for 40 more years, shame on me.
Yeah, and listen, here's one of the things. There's probably three important storylines of Julian Assange's work, whatever you think of it, and I think people in the intelligence community have grave concerns about what he's done. But that said, there are three storylines he's brought to light. One, it's incredibly easy to hack our intelligence agency, and that shouldn't be so, right? That's number one. Number two is there are intelligence tactics that are being used that a lot of people thought affected privacy in ways that we didn't think, we thought we were all protected from. And so he's divulged an erosion of American privacy in the post-9/11 era. The third thing he exposed and more recently is that the Democratic Party had a system to try to penalize Bernie Sanders and help Hillary Clinton perhaps get elected more unfairly. And again, put trouble in the way. That quote that you had from him really got to the heart of what was in those documents. The DNC's never disputed that information. They've tried to turn the story into who hacked this. It's wrong that it's out there. We're victims. But no one ever really addressed the real issue, which is that Julian Assange showed the DNC tried to rig the system for Hillary Clinton and against Bernie Sanders. Now, they say Russia did that for Donald Trump, but they don't own it on their own side of the side. And I think Julian has brought all three of those stories together. Whatever you think of the tactics, there's no doubt those three storylines are proved by the information he's put into the public realm.
Put it together for people that don't understand, because Debbie Wasserman Schultz fired on the eve of the DNC convention. Now we've got this new story about the IT guy that was double billing and had the relative working at McDonald's and another relative working at a car dealership, apparently on the payroll, too. If you have IT skills, would you really be working at McDonald's?
Yeah. There's a lot here. And
she kept him on. Then we got the whole issue of broken hard drives written up extensively in the guy's garage, government hard drives.
That's right. There is a lot of things that are under investigation now.
Well, what do you think of that? Is there a connection or no connection?
I do. I think there's going to be a lot we learn in the next few weeks about the security of the DNC's computers and Congress's computers. And I think that, Desi, there's another story that we talked about, Sean, a few weeks ago, which is there was an email that has been given to the briefed to the intelligence committees in which Debbie Wasserman Schultz said something that caused them to think that the fix was in on the Clinton investigation. And that's another piece of this puzzle, which is if that was out there, right, you have to wonder how did that email get intercepted and how did the intelligence committee learn about it? Who are these guys that were servicing congressional computers, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz, that are now indicted, arrested, charged, and being looked at? What is the security of the DNC and congressional computers in light of all this? And then if Julian is saying, hey, it wasn't Russia, I know it's somebody else, you've got to start to wonder whether the first account of what we have about this whole system is accurate. And I think it's always good in a counterintelligence investigation, which are complicated and often assessments change. That's one of the things even Barack Obama, when he announced the Russia findings in January, said, listen, some things may change. It's the best information we have now. It's always good when new evidence comes in to reassess and to reevaluate and to take every piece of information you can and give the most complete picture. And what Julian Assange has done now is put the intelligence community, the House and congressional investigators, and the president in a position to either decide to listen to him or reject and not listen to what he might have to say. And the American public will be watching.
But it would be a disservice for the American people if we're going to try to get to the truth of this, to have the guy that was responsible for getting the information out about the DNC not for no attempt to even talk to him when he's saying he's willing to talk to them. That would tell me that they really don't have a desire to get to truth, that they just want to go with their preordained narrative, which he's saying is wrong.
Yeah, he clearly is saying he's wrong. He said it to you in January emphatically, and now he's told an American congressional member that that's the case, and he's made an offer of some sort, it seems to be. He seems like he's raising his hand. That's why his lawyer's there, to see if someone wants to do a deal. Now, it's complicated, right? It is possible that the U.S. government believes it has grievances, maybe criminal or civil grievances against Julian Assange, right? And they may not want to cooperate with him ruin their chance to indict him or sue him or do something else to him for the leaks that have occurred to date. Yeah. But there is no doubt that the Russia investigation would learn something, maybe prove or disprove a theory by getting information from him if he were to provide accurate and honest information. And I think he's opened the door to that today. There's something that's being conveyed from Congressman Rohrabacher to the president that appears to be newsworthy. There appears to be future revelations that he wants to make. That's what Steiner Rohrabacher told us last night. And
This is a big story. John Solomon, The Hill, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. We'll put this story up on Hannity.com front and center. John will have more details tonight. We'll also show you some of my television interview about this very topic. Julian Assange, the guy that did upload the DNC email saying it was not Russia again, and now is offering a deal to the United States for him to show them the evidence that he was right. That would be getting to the truth. All right, as we continue, John Solomon is with us with The Hill and his blockbuster reporting that Congressman Dana Rohrabacher spent over 3 hours with Julian Assange and his lawyer yesterday. And Julian reiterating what he said to me back in January, Russia is not the source of the DNC emails. Well, we keep hearing Russia, 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 collusion, collusion. Okay, was it in fact some other party? And if in fact he's the guy that uploaded it, he's the guy that knows where it came from, does the special counsel Robert Mueller, does the Congress, does the president, the White House, and the country have a right, deserve to know the truth, considering this has gone on so long? So what is your feeling about it now that he has come out and said, I've got the answer, you're wrong? What is the obligation of Mueller and the Congress now?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? And I think we're going to see it. And there's a lot of things that can happen in an environment like this. For instance, this meeting occurred in a foreign embassy. We know from prior, ironically, from prior leaks from Julian Assange's website that the United States has great power to intercept or monitor conversations inside an embassy. So maybe the U.S. intelligence community knows everything they need to know already because they've monitored Julian Assange electronically or otherwise in the course of his time in the embassy there. That's one possibility, right? Another possibility is they do not know, or that this is considered an attorney-client type of conversation that the U.S. intelligence community normally would not listen in on. And they may need to approach Congressman Rohrabacher, say, what did he tell you? You're now a witness. We need to know. That's another possibility.
Don't they need to get on an airplane and try and meet meet the guy and interview the guy?
You would think so. He has asylum, right? So U.S. authorities theoretically can't enter that embassy unless there's a willing partner, which includes the embassy itself and Julian Assange himself. There's a bigger issue hovering over this that complicates it, which is I think Julian Assange assumes, and there's been reporting suggesting, that the U.S. government might want to indict him or sue him or take some legal action against him. And he's not likely going to want to sit in a room with federal prosecutors, FBI agents, unless he has some sort of agreement, an immunity agreement.
Well, that makes sense, but if they want to get to the truth, that's something that is, frankly, something they do every single day. That would not be extraordinary.
That's right. All right,
John Solomon, we're going to get more on this tonight. This is a huge report. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue straight ahead.
For our final news roundup and information overload.
Today, our country has lost a true American original, my friend and mentor, Robert C. Byrd. Senator Byrd was a man of surpassing eloquence and nobility. It is almost impossible to imagine the United States Senate without Robert Byrd. He was not just its longest serving member. He was its heart, its soul, and its historian. From my first day in the Senate, I sought out his guidance, and he was always generous with his time and his wisdom. I admired his tireless advocacy for his West Virginia constituents, his fierce defense of the Constitution and the traditions of the Senate, and his passion for a government that improves the lives of the people it serves. As Secretary of State, I continued to rely on his advice and counsel. I've been grateful for the support he provided as a leader of the Appropriations Committee to our diplomats and development workers as they serve our country and advance our interests all over the world. Robert C. Byrd led by the power of his example, and he made all of us who had the honor of serving as his colleagues better public servants and better citizens. After more than five decades of service, he left an indelible imprint on the Senate, on West Virginia, and on our nation. We will not see his like again.
When you don't vote, you let another church explode. When you don't vote, you allow another cross to burn. When you don't vote, you let another assault wound a brother or sister. When you don't vote, you let the Republicans continue to cut school lunches and Head Start.
I mean, you got the first sort of mainstream African American who was articulate and bright and clean and a nice-looking guy.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy.
You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. It's a fully, I'm not joking.
Well, I'm actually old enough to remember the good old days, and they weren't all that good in many ways. That message, I'll give you America great again, is if you're a white Southerner, you know exactly what it means, don't you?
Mitt Romney, he's speaking to a population of this, a segment of the population who does not like to see people other than a white man in the White House or in any other elected position.
I don't know how anyone of Hispanic heritage could be a Republican, okay? Do I need to say more?
Romney wants to let he said in the first 100 days, he's going to let the big banks once again write their own rules. Unchain Wall Street. They're going to put you all back in chains.
Don't tell me we live in a colorblind society. The Republicans know that theirs is the wrong agenda for African Americans. That's why they don't even want to count you in the census.
They're doing everything they can to stop black people, Latinos, poor people, young people, people with disabilities from voting. It's a blast from the Jim Crow past. I thought we had won that battle back in the 1960s.
No, I think that they played the race card on me. And we now know from memos from the campaign and everything that they plan to do it all along.
On June 7, 1998, in Texas, my father was killed. He was beaten, chained, and then dragged 3 miles to his death, all because he was black. So when Governor George W. Bush refused to support hate crimes legislation, it was like my father was killed all over again. Card George W. Bush and tell him to support hate crimes legislation. We won't be dragged away from our future.
All right, news roundup, information overload hour. This is the Sean Hannity Show. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to join us. And I went into one of the longer monologues I ever did on TV last night laying out this case. We all find white supremacy, the Klan, David Duke, repugnant. And I played a history of Donald Trump over the years, especially in the last year, but even going back to 2000, and even said since he was a young kid, this is how he was raised, but literally by name, renouncing, denouncing, disavowing, as he says, all of these different things. And I watched what he said as I went over again the words that he used on Saturday, the things that he said on Monday, the things that he said on Tuesday. And he does it again and again and again and again and again. And then Sunday, because he didn't mention the specific groups by name, there was a collective media meltdown. And it was obvious who he was talking about. And then after his press conference the other day, which we carried live right here on this program, it was like both sides to blame. Well, the ACLU says they were both sides to blame. The AP reported there were both sides to blame. And that doesn't mean in any way that one side, I think there's a natural abhorrence, a frankly, a moral indignation and righteous indignation when you see bigoted, hateful, racist people. It just, it makes good people instinctively, you know, recoil against evil, because that's evil. And I think that's, for those people that were shouting at them and protesting against, it's all fine. But whether you like it or not, even as the ACLU said, strange bedfellows with Hannity, but you have a right to free speech and you can't punch the people you don't like. Well, there'd be a lot of punches thrown in this country. And the group Antifa was there and Black Lives Matter was there. And I raise a lot of questions. And we just played Hillary Clinton saying that the former Klansman, Robert KKK Byrd, was her mentor. J. William Fulbright, we now know, and was the mentor of Bill Clinton. I mean, this is a guy, if you look at his history, signed the Southern Manifesto. Opposition to the Supreme Court, the historic 54 decision, Brown versus Board of Education. And, you know, J. William Fulbright, Bill Clinton's mentor, filibustered the Civil Rights Act, as did Robert Byrd, the mentor of Hillary. But they don't have to go through the same type of treatment as Republicans. And we see this every 2 years and every 4 years. And the media has zero desire to tell the truth at this point in our lives. Herman Cain is with us, fellow talk show host out of Atlanta, our major, massive 50,000-watt AM-FM flamethrower, News Talk WSB. How are you, sir?
John, I'm doing great, thank you. And, you know, that montage that you played earlier, I want you to know that I just came back from lunch, and if you had played any more, I would have thrown up. The hypocrisy is just absolutely outrageous. That's all you can say, because as you've indicated, the media is not going to cover it. They're giving Hillary and all of the hypocrites a pass, but all Donald Trump has to say is, twinkle, twinkle, little star, and they'll find something wrong with that.
What do you think it is? I mean, you know, I actually was thinking about this after you were on the TV show with me last night. I remember when you were running for president and you were getting a lot of traction and you were kicking, you know, some serious butt. You were doing great. And I remember watching. It was fascinating because in many ways you were the outsider coming in the last election cycle. And you had new innovative ideas, solutions, which I love. 999. Everybody remembers 999, and I kid you about it a lot, but it worked. And then all of a sudden, you had to be taken down by some people.
Right.
The second you got out of the race, the second you were gone, everything
I was taken
disappeared.
Out of the race because I was a threat, and I was taken out of the race with lies. Bottom line, it was with lies. But as you know, that's what the liberals and the Democrats will do if they feel you are a threat. The last thing that the Democrats wanted was for me to win the Republican nomination as a black man, an ABC, an American black conservative, and go up against Barack Obama. They paid people to lie to destroy my life, if they could have, in order for me to drop out of the race. I didn't drop out of the race because I couldn't take the heat. I dropped out of the race because I didn't want my family to have to listen to all of the malarkey that was being spun by the media. And that's exactly what they are doing today.
We're never going to get good people to run.
No, not at that rate.
And not at this rate. And frankly, one thing President Trump has is a very thick skin. He doesn't care.
He doesn't care. Now, Donald Trump called me before he declared that he was going to run, which mm-hmm. I considered it an honor. And he asked me, what advice would I give him? I said, I don't need to give you any business advice. I don't need to give you any problem-solving advice. I said, be prepared for multiple lawsuits. You can afford to fight them. I couldn't. This is why I couldn't stay in the race. And as we have seen, Donald Trump has had to fight multiple lawsuits. In addition to fighting the establishment, all of the Democrats, all of the liberals, and some of the Republicans. But he's hanging in there because he is a fighter. And this is why so many people are proud that he is the president of the United States. Here's what the liberals don't understand, Sean. All of this racial stuff is not going to cause Trump supporters to cross over to the dark side. They're simply not going to do that.
You tell a very interesting tale that I really hope people are listening to, Herman. And I want to get your reaction to what the Republicans are doing and some of this argument what the president tweeted out today about history. And I know you live in Georgia, where I lived 4 wonderful years of my life. And I love the people down south. I lived in Alabama for a while, lived in Georgia. And growing up in New York, it's just a different experience. And it collectively, it makes us the United States of America. But there's certainly differences in if you grow up in a city or you grow up in a suburb or if you grow up, you know, south, north, east, west. There are differences. And we'll talk about them when we get back.
Hannity Headline. A bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you anywhere you go. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
All right, as we continue, Herman Cain is with us, nationally syndicated radio talk show host out of Atlanta. Let me ask you about a couple of things the president tweeted today. That we now see what happened in Durham, in Baltimore, in Brooklyn, New York, and around the country. And he said, it's sad to see the history and culture of our great country being ripped apart with the removal of our beautiful statues and monuments. He said, you can't change history, but you can learn from it. Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, who's next? Washington, Jefferson, he said, it's foolish. He also said the beauty is being taken out of our cities, our towns, our parks, will be greatly missed, never able to be comparably replaced. And then he also specifically went after Lindsey Graham. And he said, publicity seeking Lindsey Graham falsely stated, I said there is moral equivalency between the KKK, neo-Nazis, and white supremacists, and people like Ms. Heyer, this young woman who tragically lost her life. He writes such a disgusting lie, he just can't forget the election trouncing the people of South Carolina will remember. And then he said the public is learning even more about how dishonest the fake news is. They totally misrepresent what I say about hate, bigotry, it's a shame. You have something in Georgia. I've been there. They have a light show, or at least they used to, Herman, at Stone Mountain.
Yeah.
And they have the Confederate president at the time, Jefferson Davis, among others. Stonewall Lee and Jefferson Davis, that's who it was.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts about this movement?
I think this movement is bull feathers, and here's why.
Bull feathers?
Bull feathers, and you can use whatever word you want to use for the second part of that phrase.
Oh, we know what you meant, Herman. We know you well.
Here's the thing. Ignorance of history does not make you smarter. That's what the Democrats and the liberals are trying to do. The second thing that they're trying to do is if you start this process of eliminating any sort of things that remind us of an ugly past, what's next? Are they then going to rip it out of history books so our children will be ignorant? Are they then going to want to dismantle Mount Rushmore? Where does it stop? And as Newt Gingrich said, it does not stop. And so my point is simply this. We do not need to erase our history. We do not need to sandblast images of the Confederate off of Stone Mountain. Why? It's part of our ugly history. How do you eliminate the ugly history of slavery? How do you eliminate the ugly history of the Civil Rights Movement and Jim Crow? You can't. It's part of our history. The good news is we have gotten past that. And the people who want to drag us back as Andrew Young said, to fight the Civil War again is a waste of time and a waste of money.
You know, Herman, I think one of what do you make of this argument I made for years? Our founders were nowhere near perfect. Everybody knows that it is morally reprehensible and evil, slavery. Did our framers of our Constitution and founding fathers, in their wisdom, in this sense, know that the fight wouldn't have been won then, the United States wouldn't have come together, and that they put in place the way to right wrongs, correct the moral injustices that many did see at the time?
Here's what our founders realized, which is the greatness of our founders. Number one, they set the bar where America needed to be when they said, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Sean, that set the bar where we aspire to get to. We are closer to that bar today than we have ever been in history. The founders set the bar high. They didn't set the bar
low.
We
just go, it's our job to finish the job and make it a more perfect union.
And all of these people that want to focus on race, they want to focus on demagoguing conservatives and liberals, conservatives and Republicans, they are trying to drag us backwards instead of helping us to go forward. That's the bottom line.
Herman Cain, thanks as always for being with us. Love having you on the show. You're the best. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. When we come back, we will check in with our friends Jonathan Gillum, Rick Unger, and more straight ahead.
We know you never want to miss the Sean Hannity Show. And now you never have to. Just sign up for Hannity Headlines. A bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you on your laptop, your mobile phone, everywhere you go. Even to your liberal in-law's place in Vermont.
So, yeah.
And after a few hours of that, you'll be glad you brought Sean along. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN. If you want to be a part of the program, the consulate, by the way, teams are assisting Americans in Barcelona even now as we speak. And that's been going on throughout the afternoon. Another terrorist attack that has been confirmed there as this van driving into, once again, a crowd of pedestrians. Terror on the move. It goes on and on and on, ramming into the crowd outside a kosher restaurant inside of Barcelona. Joining us now with this and, of course, the latest on everything going on in Washington, Rick Unger, who's a senior political contributor, Forbes.com. I have no idea why Forbes made that decision. And he's the co-host of Steele and Unger on SiriusXM. Jonathan Gillum. He's a host of The Experts, Navy SEAL, former FBI, and Federal Air Marshal. Welcome both of you back. Well, it's, you know, it's just not surprising, Jonathan, in any way.
No, not at all. You know, this, what we have to wrap our minds around in this world is two things. The civilians that aren't in law enforcement and military need to realize that these things are going to continue to happen. And they need to, when they go out somewhere, they need to look around to determine themselves. If I was going to be an attacker, why would I be attacking? They need to know that. When the attack would happen, where it would happen, and what kind of attack it might be. Look around. Just think about it. And if they do that, that's one of the number one things they can do to protect themselves. And the other thing is, why isn't law enforcement realizing that these vehicle attacks are serious business and just put up barriers or park police cars or city cars, whatever, just as a barrier so people can't drive into these areas?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very simple fix, this particular type of attack.
But it does bring up the immigration issues again, the migration issues again. It just brings up all of those issues that we've talked so often about. You know, I don't understand Great Britain and 80 Sharia courts. And I'm pretty certain my buddy Rick Unger, the liberal, agrees that that's not conducive to facilitating assimilation and people getting along.
Yeah, actually, I do agree. Assimilation is the key to all of it. You know, it's unfortunate. Excuse me. It's unfortunate what happened today. And you know, I'm listening to Jonathan's ideas, and those might be great ideas. You've got to find a way to deal with it. This is becoming the method du jour of killing people, and that is to drive vans, cars, whatever, off the street onto the sidewalks. You would think that police departments could find a way to deal with the problem. I hope they do. This is terrible. And no, assimilation has always been the key. One of the reasons that things have gone relatively well in this country is that we have a better history when it comes to assimilation here than some of the European, Western European in particular, countries do. They've had real issues with this.
Yeah. I mean, it just is so sad because we're going to keep going through this. And then it brings up the issues. I think the president, when he ran, one of the things that resonated was building a wall. One of the things that resonated was protecting the American people. And if you come from countries that practice Sharia, and that's the culture you grow up in your whole life, isn't it a good idea, Rick, to find out what's in your heart, whether or not you agree in persecuting women and treating women like fourth-class citizens and killing gays and lesbians and persecuting Christians and persecuting Jews? It's kind of a good idea if you grew up under a system like that to make sure if you're going to come here, you don't really hold those values.
Yeah, that's not going to work out so well for you here. I don't know that I necessarily connect that with the wall, because I've never been convinced that the wall is going to do a darn thing to stop undesirable people from getting in. I think it's just a campaign promise that doesn't have much merit. But I do agree that you're coming to the wrong place. If you don't want to live in a country that has certain values and those aren't your values, why the heck would you want to be there? You know, go somewhere where they agree with the way you see the world. Again, fortunately, most of the people who have immigrated to our country do come because they want to adopt American values. They respect American values and they want to be a part of it. That's, again, always been our history. Obviously, from time to time, somebody gets through that doesn't and has a whole different purpose of being here in mind. And that obviously is the danger.
Jonathan?
Well, it's funny because Rick just explained exactly how I feel about people who are born in America and aren't happy with the system here in the United States. They should also go somewhere where
that's
they can
a little
find
different.
A system that works
that's
for them.
That's a little different. I think Americans have a right and an obligation to stand up and fight for a system that if they think that things aren't going well. That's our obligation as Americans. You can agree or disagree on what might be on their mind and if they're right or wrong with what's best for the country. That's what makes, you know, horse races and the United States. But no, Americans...
Unfortunately, for people like that,
to who we are.
And I'm not putting you into that category, Rick, because I know you love this country. But there's a lot of people that will fail to realize what they have, that they were born in freedom, and they constantly want to change things. The other thing that's bothering me here, and I think this is a perfect lead into this, is I agree with the wall. I think we should protect our borders to keep nefarious people out and allow people that want to come here the correct way in. But here's the other problem. We're not guarding ourselves from within. And when I look online and I see John McCain, Mitt Romney, and Marco Useless Rubio giving Antifa, a communist organization, a foothold and props for being freedom fighters, what am I supposed to think when these
high level members? Where have they done that, first of all? I've read everything they're writing. I've never seen any one of them give
Antifa props. Look at their tweet. They all tweeted it out.
Props. They said Antifa is wonderful. No, they didn't. Don't say.
No, they said the people on the other side were fighting against racism and for freedom. And that is baloney.
Those people
were communists.
They were fighting against racism. See, here's the thing.
No, they were. They showed up
to fight.
Rick,
wait. Let me respond to that. You can certainly have a discussion. Listen, I'm not a supporter of violence, so I don't think that's the way to do it. But, you know, if you have on one side Nazis and white supremacists, who the three of us, I know, agree, are not good people, and you have somebody on the other side...
No, they're not just not good people. They're evil people.
They're evil people. So if you have somebody on the other side opposing it, I think we could all agree that's a good thing. Now, if they take that next step and they go to... Why is it a good
thing? Well, let him finish. I think, Jonathan, let him finish this thought, because I think I was about to agree with him. Because I do think there's a natural revulsion by good people when you see these Nazi, you know, evil jerks that, you know, doing whatever they do. I get repulsed by them. You know what I do in my spare time. I mean, I have a switch in my head, and when it goes off, I know what I'm feeling. But you can't act on your feeling is where you are headed.
See, that's exactly where I was headed indeed. You know, that emotional switch goes off. And you know the ironic part about it, and this goes for left, right, or whoever, the leading study in this, I'm actually talking about it tonight on my program, has proven
through excellent research that nonviolence is a better way to accomplish your goals in social situations like this than violence. You look at the statistics, violence has not worked very often where nonviolent approaches have. So absolutely, whether it's Antifa or anybody else, if they're picking up sticks and either fighting back or starting the fight.
Why did the media the media go so nuts when the president said that he literally tweeted out they're evil on Saturday and said they're evil on Saturday, meaning the Nazis. Then on Monday, he went into great specificity because people were saying, you didn't say the name. Now, I have a history that I played of him saying the name over and over again. And it's not like we didn't know who he was talking about on Saturday. And then he says it again Monday and Tuesday, and everybody's going nuts. How many times does one have to say that?
But I can answer that, Sean. It's not about how many times he said the names of the bad guys, because you're absolutely right. He said it on Saturday, and he said it many times before. It was the equivalency, and it's just for the reason that we were just talking about. We may not like the tactics that the people who were anti-Nazi, anti-white supremacists used. I get that.
Stop with that. That's nonsense.
You can't draw an equivalence between Nazis and white supremacists and those who are against them and expect that to come out well.
Listen, you're drawing something that's not true. I'm not saying that people that are against white supremacists are bad. I'm against white supremacists, but I'm also against communists. And that's being completely ignored in media by politicians and evidently on this show. The Nazis are a small group of people that killed, if you look at historically, 6 million, 9 million Jews. Do you know how many people communists have killed? They've killed over 150 million people.
And it's
now, who is more evil?
By the way, let me just stop this. For those that are monitoring the Sean Hannity Show, they get paid to monitor the Sean Hannity Show in the hopes that Sean Hannity says something bad, inappropriate, or over the bounds, so you can boycott and get rid of the show. This is a debate between a left-winger and a right-winger. Response, left-winger Rick Unger.
That was good. look, there's no harm in pointing that out, and your statistics are right, Jonathan. The problem is that what we saw on Saturday, and I am absolutely certain that you are right, there were communists, because we know that there are communists who were associated with Antifa. So yes, that's true. But nobody saw that, and nobody is seeing it, and nobody's going to see it, no matter how much you think they should, as this was a communist versus Nazi ideology battle, because it wasn't. It really wasn't.
I disagree with you. I think when they bust people in, they have organizers. They do it all over the country. They just happen to pick this particular one where some insane Nazi weirdo drove a car and killed a girl. Had they not done that, it would just been simply a battle.
No, I'll tell you why that's not true. It's about Friday night. You know, if only Saturday had happened, I think there'd be a lot more merit to your point. I think people would have said two sides got together and beat the you-know-what out of each other. We don't like that. I get that. But you can't forget what happened Friday night. It wasn't fights between Antifa, communists, anybody else, students, or whoever you want to pick. It was people who were white supremacists and Nazis marching through Charlottesville, carrying torches in homage to what the Nazis did in Nuremberg and Berlin in the 30s. And then you know what they would do with those torches when the march was over? They would take the oil and dump it on the heads of Jews and gypsies. They were out there shouting Nazi slogans, anti-Jewish slogans, anti-black slogans, and that's the problem. There was nobody fighting them that you can call a communist or whatever you think happened on Saturday. And that is why we cannot make this an equivalence. There were 2 days involved here, not just Saturday.
Yeah, the difference is the first day, the city gave these terrorists, on Friday, the city gave the terrorists, and I'm talking about the Nazi terrorists, they gave them a permit to do that. The next day, these people bust in and large buses with the Antifa people come in there and start a fight.
Yeah, you're missing my point.
What I'm trying to say, Rick, is that we are completely ignoring one bad because everybody feels the other bad is worse. And that's not the case. Two people or two groups that are extreme national security risks to this country showed up
in Charlottesville to fight. And we should be acknowledging all of them. And that's not happening.
How are you blaming them for Friday night, Jonathan? That's a pretty simple question.
No, I'm not. I'm blaming the white supremacists showed up Friday, and they did their protest. They got the legal permits. The city gave it to them. But what happened Saturday, and I don't think Friday should have happened, but what happened Saturday involved two groups that are a national security threat to this country, and nobody is recognizing the other side, with the exception of President
Trump. I don't think you can say nobody, because all of Right Talk Radio is talking about it. The president is talking about it. So this meme of, gee, nobody's talking about it, well, that's nonsense. You're talking about it right now on the Sean Hannity Show. So I don't think that's the issue about who is or isn't talking about it. The issue is moral equivalency. And when you see what happened Friday night, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I am not into violent means of protest. I'm just not. I don't like it emotionally.
Nobody
and I
likes
don't think it.
It
works. What's that?
Nobody likes it. This is our country.
No, nobody likes it. Exactly right. But at the same time, I'd be lying to you that when I saw those people out there, you know, I'm Jewish. My family.
Well, I'm Catholic. It's the same thing. They hate Catholics. They hate Jews. They hate Hispanics. They hate blacks. They hate everybody but themselves.
So when
so
I
does
see
the other
them
side.
Doing that,
so does the
I
other
can't
side.
Sit here and tell you.
You think,
wait, let me finish my sentence.
Communist,
I can't sit here and tell you that I feel bad if somebody throws a punch at Richard Spencer in a press conference.
All right, let me. I'm going to have to leave
just
it here.
Being honest.
Listen, this is a debate that is important, but certain fundamental truth needs to be told. You can't have a fight unless there's two people fighting, and we saw a lot of fighting, and we have the images of the Antifa people and some other agitators that were there on full display. And the president mentioned that, and somehow they interpreted it as a moral equivalency. That's not what he said. And he did say, bad people, you cannot, even the ACLU said, you cannot hit people because you don't like them. Nobody likes these people. And that's where we all agree. And the whole thing is sad. A young woman lost her life, many people injured. And look at where the country is. We're not solving the problems for the people of this country that need problems solved. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Three big stories we are covering tonight. Hannity Live, 10 Eastern, Fox News. Obviously, the latest Barcelona, the latest terror attack. We'll have all the updates, all that you need to know, and I'm sure by the time we get on the air at 10, there's going to be a lot more that has happened. John Solomon talking about the details, Dana Rohrabacher's meeting with Julian Assange, who says he has evidence it was not Russia, and he's willing to provide such evidence. We'll get to that, and of course, the latest out of Charlottesville and the left's being unhinged. 10 Eastern, Fox.